Join me in the spirit of reflection. I love you. It doesn't matter what you've done or haven't done. It doesn't matter how hard it's been or how hard it gets. I am yours. You are mine. We are connected, cut from the same cloth. And nothing can separate us. That's a version of what I said to my mother this past week and in the weeks prior to her dying on Tuesday. My mother was a staunchly independent woman. To understand her, you would have to know that she was born with two left brains placed side by side, reinforcing each other. Her sharp intelligence was capable of making amazing distinctions incessantly. She came across at times as critical. She could be brusque and even alienating. Because she was smart and funny, and underneath it all, she really deeply cared about people. There were so many in her life who saw past her tendency to be such a smartass. But not many of them knew the real reason why she acted so tough. And that was because my mother spent the majority of her life being very scared. Over and over in her life, she carefully cultivated this persona of toughness to protect her from being hurt. Because she had grown up wondering whether she was worthy, whether she was loved or even lovable, or if she belonged. For most of her life, she was able to cover up her insecurity by being incredibly competent and tenacious and resilient and having a quick wit. But in her last few years, and especially in the last month of her life, as her mind and her body began to betray her and fail, she lost the ability to camouflage her fear. She became more and more afraid until, towards the end, she began to feel naked and abandoned and terrified of being alone. And so she called out, especially to her children, and asked us to visit. And when I wasn't there, I called her every day. And I tried to remember to say this: I love you. It doesn't matter what you have done or haven't done. It doesn't matter how hard it's been or how hard it gets. I am yours. You are mine. We are connected, cut from the same cloth, and nothing can separate us. I know these words because they were practically etched into my soul. Not because they were said to me countless times, but indeed because they weren't said enough. How many people here growing up heard, "I love you," too many times? How many were told that they were wanted too often? How many people understood that connection without ever doubting it or needing reassurance? My mom was born with two left brains. She cultivated them, and she was encouraged to do so by a culture that recognizes and rewards the ability to ask questions and break things down and make distinctions. But it's the right brain that encourages us to see that bigger picture, to see things in their wholeness, to know connection and how everything fits together, what it means to belong to everything around you. How do you think her life would have been different if she had been able to truly see the world and herself as connected? How would your life be different? When we are born, our brains are still growing. It isn't until the ages between 6 months and 3 years that most human beings fully develop the portion of their brain which begins to recognize spatial limits and boundaries. This particular portion of the brain creates distinctions between self and non-self. Up until that point, an infant thinks that it is part of everything, or rather, that everything is an extension of them. Their existence is literally limitless. After that distinction is made, there is forever a yearning for reassurance of some sense of connection, a pervasive sense of separateness that they have to contend with. There is part of me that decided to become a minister when I was very young. I think it was when that particular part of my brain kicked into gear and began to tell me that I was separate, because I knew what it was telling me and that the world around me was telling me was not true. I knew I was connected. I knew that I belonged connected. And everything else that was treating me as separate was tragically misinformed. Forever after, I yearned to hear those words to reassure me. I love you. I am yours. You are mine. And nothing can separate us. Today is the fourth in a four-part series on power. And today I want to talk about brain power, and particularly the power of choice and the power of connection. We live in the midst of a culture that is rampant with left-brain people. But today I am calling us together to step to the right of our left brain and contemplate something that is very much part of our brain's awareness, and that is our connectivity, our interrelatedness. And because it is somewhat foreign territory for highly reasoned, critically minded Unitarians, I am drawing on a guide who understands the territory very thoroughly and very personally. Jill Bolte Taylor, who some of you might know from her TED Talk back in 2008, was doctor of neuroanatomy at Harvard Medical School. She was an expert on the brain. She was an expert on how it works, or in some unfortunate cases, how it doesn't work. But on the morning of December 10th, 2000, Jill Bolte Taylor had to deal with a brain disorder of her own. She awoke with a pounding headache behind her left eye, the kind of caustic pain that you get when you bite down on ice cream. She tried to get on her exercise machine, hoping that the pain would pass, but soon noticed that something wasn't quite right. Her hands looked strange to her as they gripped the rails, like primitive lobster claws. And even the shape of her body seemed unfamiliar and strange. whoa, I'm a pretty weird looking thing, she thought. And then, just as that happened, she began to be aware of herself, observing herself as though she were outside of her body, witnessing from a larger perspective. Her headache got worse, and as she moved to the bathroom to take something for it, she began to hear her own brain sending dialogue into her, saying things like, okay, you muscles, you need to contract. You muscles, you need to relax. And that's how she went step by step into the bathroom. But she lost her balance and fell against a wall. And there she noticed something that she'd never really noticed before. That the atoms and the molecules of her arm that was pressing against the wall seemed to blend and exchange with the atoms and the molecules of the wall itself. And all she could detect was energy and energy exchange. And she began asking herself, what's wrong? What's going on here? And it was in that moment that all the brain chatter, the left hemisphere brain that pipes in continual dialogue into our head, went totally silent, just like someone suddenly pressed the neuro-response mute button. And at first, she was totally shocked to be inside a completely silent mind. But then she became captivated by the magnificence of all the energy around her. And because she could no longer identify the boundaries of her body, she felt enormous and expansive and at one with the enormous field of energy that she was part of. And it felt exhilarating, more beautiful than anything she had ever known. And then all of a sudden, her left hemisphere came back online and in an alarm sort of way announced, hey, you've got a problem. You've got to do something. But before she could connect with that next logical step in the sequence, her brain clicked off and she drifted back into that expansive consciousness which she affectionately was coming to know as La La Land. And it was hard to be alarmed at all because everything was so beautiful there. Now imagine for a second what it would be like to totally disconnect from your brain chatter. Imagine going into a space where all the stress related to your job of tabulating your constant to-do list, of tracking the millions of things that need your attention, when all of that is suddenly gone, wouldn't you feel instantly lighter in your body? And imagine if the chatter about all of your relationships, asking whether or not you're liked or disliked, whether and how you're judged, whether you're meeting other expectations, all of that was suddenly gone, wouldn't you feel a sense of peacefulness? And imagine losing decades and decades of emotional baggage, hang-ups and letdowns. Wouldn't you feel a sense of euphoria? That's what Jill Bolte Taylor felt that morning. Lighter, peaceful, euphoric. All the many things that many of us think of as synonymous with spiritual. She was having a stroke, which began disabling her left hemisphere and accentuating her right hemisphere. And so let me say a little bit more about what that means. Our right hemisphere is all about the present moment, right here, right now. Our right hemisphere thinks in pictures and learns kinesthetically through movement. It receives information in the form of energy stimulating our sensory systems. And this enormous collage of data all describes that immediate present moment. All awareness comes in pictures of the energy within us, interfacing and exchanging with the energy all around us. We are energy beings connected to other energy beings without distinctions of separateness, all right here, right now, everything fitting together, everything as it is, neither good nor bad, neither right nor wrong, everything is, and everything is one. Our left hemisphere, which she was losing, is a very different place. Our left hemisphere thinks linearly and logically. It holds files and more files and files of the past and is constantly preoccupied with updating files about the future. Our left hemisphere takes all the data of the present moment and picks out details and more details and details about those details, and it categorizes and organizes all that information. It compares with previous information and checks, especially for safety, calculating probabilities of what might happen next. Our left hemisphere uses language as a tool of communication. It is the ongoing brain chatter that reminds us to pick up bananas on our way home. It is what reminds us to do our laundry and to pay our bills. But perhaps most important, it is that little voice that says inside us, I am. I am. And it's that left hemisphere voice saying, I am, that constantly informs us that we are separate, autonomous, individual, solid beings, separate and distinct from other individual autonomous beings, all in motion around us. So imagine that left hemisphere and all that chatter gone and replaced by the right hemisphere's sense of energy extended beyond boundaries, connected to everything. That's where Jill Bolte Taylor was exactly when her left hemisphere, like a loose wire reconnecting, came back online. And immediately it told her, hey, you've got to start paying attention. You've got to get help. You've got to go to work. Which prompted the question, can I drive? And at that exact moment, her arm went totally limp by her side, which was the final cue that she needed as a neuroanatomist to put all the pieces together and understand that she was having a stroke. And because her left brain had shorted out, she heard her right brain say exactly what you would expect a right brain of a neuroanatomist to say when having a stroke. Wow, this is so cool. How many brain scientists get the opportunity to study their own brain from the inside out? But the fascination of her right brain didn't completely eliminate the panic of her left brain, and that left brain immediately began to inform her, like a good Unitarian, I'm a very busy person. I don't have time for a stroke. She immediately struggled to employ what little she had left of her left brain, which told her to find the phone and use it to call for help. But she had lost all memory to recall numbers or even to recognize what numbers were on a piece of paper. It took her 45 minutes to make a call to one of her close colleagues. And when he answered the phone, she heard him say, "Arr-r-r-r-r-r." And she thought, oh my God, he sounds like a golden retriever. And in her mind, she responded, this is Jill. I'm having a stroke. I need help. But what came out of her mouth was, arr-r-r-r-r. And yet, even though the left side of her brain knew she didn't understand his speech and he couldn't understand hers, the right side of the brain, through sensitivity to tone and volume and energy, knew that he would send help. And he did. She was rushed to Mass General Hospital. She lost consciousness en route. But as she did, she was very cognizant of two things. One, that she felt this feeling of expansiveness and connection to everything around her, and that she was no longer this distinct and bounded being apart from other beings in this small, distinguished body. She was so big, in fact, that as the reminder of her left brain tried to urge her to hold on to life, to this finite body and identity, she remembered imagining how impossible it would be to fit all of this into that tiny body again. Jill Bolte Taylor experienced in that moment the startling reality of the dichotomy that most human beings live with every day. The same realization that we all have, only discovered in reverse. the same feeling that I felt as a little boy coming from a right-brained awareness of being immersed in connection and being pushed out into a left-brain world of critical distinctions and individual separateness. It is living in this world every day with its relentless tendencies to distinguish and judge and evaluate us one from another that has us craving for some place, places that can echo our instinctive and inherent intuition that we are all one, that we are connected and cut from the same cloth. This is a spiritual impulse, the same spiritual impulse that compels monks to meditate for countless hours, because what they're trying to do is to quiet that brain chatter. We who hear about those spiritual people often think that they are developing their sense of oneness through meditation, but they're not. They are simply allowing their sense of oneness to be noticeable by quieting all that left brain chatter that usually overrides our feelings of inherent connection. When Jill Bolte Taylor regained consciousness at Mass General Hospital, she was inundated with so much energy all around her in the hospital, the bright lights, the loud sounds, and the people poking and prodding her. And without her left hemisphere, she could only understand herself as this great expansive being. So all of these people were inside her personal space, and she described it as very assaulting. Her instinct was to heal, and her right brain helped her become acutely aware that there were two kinds of people that she encountered in the hospital: those who brought her energy and those who sucked it out of her. And she was desperate, as she put it, quote, for people to be aware of and take responsibility for the energy they were giving off. This was her awareness on the third day in the hospital, when she could sense the buzz of something about to happen. All of the people in the room were talking about Gigi. And she could sense an energy just in the word, in the name, a hopeful energy. And she didn't know that Gigi was her mother. She didn't even know what a mother was. She had lost all association and memory. All she knew was that she heard the word Gigi and she could feel a hopeful energy in all of the people around her. The moment her mother walked into the room, she made eye contact with Jill. She looked around the room and calmly and appropriately greeted all the staff, the doctors, the nurses, and then she walked over to the side of the bed that was occupied by the person who only days before was her Harvard graduate doctor daughter. And she got to the side of the bed and she pulled back the covers and she climbed into the bed and she wrapped her arms around Jill and she began to rock her back and forth. And Jill, awash in this right brain world, felt a rush of the only kind of energy that she could possibly understand, that energy of love and connection. And she thought to herself, oh my, so this is what a Gigi is. Someone who understands connection. Someone who understands how to say, I love you. It doesn't matter what you've done or haven't done. It doesn't matter how hard it's been or how hard it gets. I am yours. You are mine. We are connected. Cut from the same cloth. And nothing can separate us.